Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning appointment with Northwestern Medicine. And with us today, Chief Medical Officer, Northwest Region for Northwestern Medicine, Dr. Irfan Hafiz. Doctor, good morning. Let's talk first about allergy season. It's starting earlier and lasting longer. What's going on out there?
Sure. Good morning. Yeah, I mean, just with some of the climate change, you know, we're starting to see warmer weather. We are starting to see, you know, therefore allergies and growth of plants is starting to go earlier and go longer in the season as well. And with that, you may still see allergies still around even as late as October.
And do you recommend antihistamine pills for people?
Yeah, for those who are suffering from that or uncomfortable, a lot of nasal congestion, scratchy eyes, things like that, yeah, some daily antihistamines can go a long way and reduce that those symptoms.
What about those nasal sprays over the counter?
Yeah, for those who are really having a tough time, the nasal sprays do play a good role in that. And but if they're still persisting, definitely consult your doctor.
There's a new study out that examined data from 2 million older adults and found a connection between falls and Alzheimer's disease. Explain what the research showed here.
Yeah, this was an interesting one. There's that people who suffered falls, you know, they saw an increased risk of about 20% of future diagnosis of Alzheimer's. And I think what's important is the study that doesn't necessarily conclude that the falls are leading or some kind of injuries leading to the Alzheimer's, but that there is neurologic symptoms that are developing that may be the fall being an early sign of developing some of these neurologic symptoms. So I think it's more about that. So as people get older, especially over the age of 65, an unprovoked fall, a lot of times people think of it, they'll write it off as, oh, I just, you know, caught my foot on furniture or the carpet or something. But do want to look at those seriously and make sure that there isn't other neurologic issues developing.
But you're still advising folks, especially older folks, to get out and walk as much as possible, right?
Yes. Yeah. But make sure that we, you know, have the right shoes and you know, it's in the right conditions there. So we're reducing the risk of injury when if and when there's a fall.
Recently, research came out, and this was pretty interesting because they spoke to these people doing the study, talked to longevity specialists about not only living longer, but living longer healthy. And, of course, we heard about daily exercise, diet changes, and social calls. What did you make of this study?
Yeah, this was an interesting study, really looking at, again, as you said, quality of life, not just the quantitative life there as well as it is, but looking at some of those daily factors such as, you know, exercising, even minimum amount every day really goes a long way with that. Really also looking at that mental wellness and having that social connection, that social network is really, really important to help promote that, you know, along with, you know, moderation in diet, you know, maybe a little bit of a calorie reduction will go also a long way for a lot of people there.
How important was it for exercise, whatever your routine is, to be mixed, to change your exercise routine?
Yeah, that was a great point. And I, what was interesting there is trying to do different types of exercise. If you're doing strength training one day, do a little bit of cardio later in the week, things like that. So you're not just exercising one particular part of your body, but that you are mixing it up and different muscle groups, using some cardio as well, definitely goes a long way in keeping overall physical activity.
When these reports come out, we always hear more and more about how important socialization is. And in fact, I know several doctors have referred to a loneliness epidemic. But this interaction is very important, especially as you get older, isn't it?
Very much so. And it's really a part of that chronic stress reduction and so on there, and having that support structure. And we talked about that, I think, on your show maybe a year or so ago, that there are some studies that really show cardiovascular health as well improves by having that socialization network there.
Was intermittent fasting mentioned in this research?
There is, and there's some mixed results on that, but I think the most important thing about intermittent fasting is that it makes you a little bit more conscious of the amount of calories. People who do intermittently fast take in about 500-600 calories less per day. And for those of us with a little bit of, you know, weight to lose, it does go at least as a first good step of trying to reduce some of that weight.
It's our Monday morning Northwestern Medicine Health Checkup, and with us today is Dr. Irfan Hafiz. I want to talk more about this intermittent fasting because it is very popular, and also Mrs. Surratt insists I do this, doctor. So I want to ask you a couple more things about this. Is the idea here weight loss or health benefits?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the data to suggest the first part, I mean, the weight loss, I think, is a little stronger. There is a mild weight loss. It's not severe. If you've got a couple pounds to lose, intermittent fasting is probably a great way to start off with that, and without having to do calorie counts and so on. So I think it's a great way to start that. The health benefits beyond that is still a little bit controversial there. There are probably some. There was a study a couple years ago, I think, that looked at maybe slightly higher cardiac risk, but I think there's more studies to come on that.
This was all built on studies of mice, wasn't it?
It was, and that's really where they were looking at. Now, this is one of those examples where you can't take everything in mice and directly correlate it with a human outcome there. So there may be some things that we can learn there, but not exact.
And if you're going to do this, is it an eight-hour window we're talking about? What would be best?
Yeah, and I think for someone starting out, that 8 and 16 is what they would call that, is I think probably the better way to go. There are more hardcore ways of doing that, but the 8 and 16 is probably your easiest way to start out.
All right. I don't know if I'm convinced yet, but we'll see what happens here. Northwestern Medicine recently did a study on long COVID, and there was a connection here to abnormal CT scans of the lungs. Explain this, doctor.
Yeah, so we do have a chronic COVID, long COVID clinic, so we do have patients who have had COVID but are still experiencing symptoms. In this case, we're mainly looking at respiratory symptoms such as shortness of breath and coughing, and really looking at, you know, what's going on with those patients. So when they did CAT scans on them, that they did see that there is scarring in the lungs. And these are people, not all of these people had severe disease or were hospitalized. Some of them were just had outpatient, and they were never had to be admitted, and they still developed some fibrosis. So not saying that everyone is going to develop that much, but some people can, and if you've had COVID and are experiencing longer coughing and shortness of breath, certainly this is something to be aware of.
The people in this study, pretty much all ages, right?
They were. The range was somewhere around the low 30s to 80, so it isn't just somebody who's much older. I think the average age was somewhere around in the early 60s or so.
So what was your takeaway from this? Is it that more studies are needed on this?
Yeah, for sure. I think understanding the progression of the disease is by no means necessarily gives us a cure on what to do with long COVID. We know that avoiding COVID overall is important. I know that there's a lot out there saying that, oh, this is just a bad flu. It still isn't. Even though the death rates from COVID now compared to, say, 4 years ago have gone down drastically, but there still is lingering effects that are beyond just a cold virus. So avoiding getting COVID is still pretty important. So, you know, we are getting into that fall season. So, you know, making sure your annual flu and COVID shots are up to date is useful.
Yeah, give us the quick take on that, too, because a lot of our listeners email us and text us about the COVID vaccine, flu shots, RSV. It's okay to get these shots together, is that right?
Absolutely, absolutely. They're all inactivated vaccines, so those are all safe enough to do together there, and we have enough data now on all of them to say that we can do that, and it's easier to do all of them at once if you can, so you don't forget, you know, and have to, lives get very busy, and then we tend to forget.
Well, we hear now's the time for the COVID shot, also the flu vaccine. Is that also true for RSV?
Yeah, especially especially if you are, more senior in age, the RSV is significant and it can cause a respiratory illness. So if you are getting your shots, please, check in with your physician and try to get those as well.
Finally, and this is timely as people have just brushed their teeth, we hope, there's an ongoing controversy about fluoride. And what is the latest on this? Because it's, of course, used in all toothpastes, pretty much all toothpastes and mouthwashes. Do we know it's safe yet?
Yeah, we do know it's quite safe. We've been, fluorinating water for a number of decades now, and communities have seen a considerable drop in tooth decay. And you want to understand that it's not just the tooth decay that we're trying to reduce. I mean, it may seem somewhat minor, but there are other health issues that do come within communities that have a lot of tooth decay. There are some heart infections and things like that that do occur. So this is really trying to do preventive health at a community public level to help avoid some of these serious illnesses later. I think some of the stuff that was published recently was talking about some of the waning benefits of water fluorination, but it doesn't necessarily, I think it's, the headline is a little deceiving. It's not that it's bad for you, it's that we fluoride so many things, such as toothpaste, and that's so prevalent that the overall benefit of the water is not as much as it used to be before toothpaste had fluorine in it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Dr. Hafiz, normally at this time I would get a little snack, but I'll wait, test out the intermittent fasting, see how that goes, report back to you. Have a good day. Thank you very much.
You too.